Hello, welcome to another episode of Andrew's Amazing Podcast. I'm your host, James Santana. As always, enjoy my illustrious sidekick, Hunter Van Lierop.
Beep, bop, boop.
Oh my God.
That's what I got today.
I mean, dude, like, not for nothing. It's funny when we do, like, those little bits in the opening. Like, I've gone back to listen to them sometimes.
Some of them are pretty good. Some of them were, like, really good, and some of them were just like this one.
Yeah, like I don't know what to say, and I'm like...
Last week's wasn't great, but some of them were pretty good.
Last week, you tried to do American Sign Language on a podcast.
Yeah, I just wasn't thinking, man. I was like, this will be cool. And I'm like, wait, we don't have cameras on. Yeah. I have a camera on my computer that's always pointed at me. It's not on, but, you know, right. I see it in the corner of my eye, and I'm like, oh.
That's fair. Guys, we are brought to you by Andrew's Amazing Comics down in Salem, New York. First, we'll talk some personal stuff real quick. If you've been following us on our journey with Unknown Heroes, hopefully by Wednesday, when this episode airs, we would have proof in of the book, and I will be sending out and mailing out the books in the next coming days. If not, follow us on all those social medias to stay in the loop kind of thing about what's happening with the book. Make sure you guys download the PDF. The PDF will be coming down April 1st because we have something else launching April 1st. So stay tuned for all that stuff. And me and Hunter, I can gladly say this now before I get any further. Me and Hunter have been working in the background for something really cool for the last couple of days and last couple of weeks and months that hopefully you guys kind of follow along and stay with us and go forward with us on that journey as we make more comic book stuff.
Yeah, a lot of it will spin out of that thing coming in April.
Yes. So please stay tuned as we talk more stuff and have all the fun goodies lined up for you guys from there. But, and by the way, it doesn't mean the podcast will stop. The podcast is still going on. But yeah, and hopefully we'll have some cool guests lined up in the future because of this. But
yeah, fingers crossed.
We are brought to you by Andrew's Amazing Comics down in Salem, New York. Let's start the show off with some news. Guys, going back to what we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks with the casting of Supergirl, it is officially over and done. Millie Alcock from Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, she played young Rhaenyra. She is now officially Kara Danvers, Kara Zor-El, Supergirl for the... Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow movie, which is basically...
Well, it's also Superman Legacy. Yeah. That's what she's cast in originally, but they announced in James Gunn's big slate that there will be a Supergirl spin-out movie based on the Tom King run, so she's been both.
Yes, which is cool. Again, with the last week, they had the final three. And we were still talking about...
Yeah, last week we were talking about it. I forget who we said would be... Oh, we said Meg Donnelly, yes. I think, because she already voiced her. But I was down with either of them.
Yeah, honestly, with these two, like, it's fine. Like, I have to get over the fact that she's playing Supergirl because House of Dragon's coming back. And I want to rewatch House of Dragon. Mm-hmm. But I either one would have been fine. I actually would have preferred Donnelly only because I like that idea of synergy between having it like, oh, she's the voice actress for this and now she's playing the live action one. It's just cool in my head.
Yeah, but that might confuse some people, but I don't know.
No, I get it. I 100% get it. But I like it. It's cool casting. And it does fit into my idea of having it as an unknown. Like, hey, have an unknown. Sorry. An unknown that could age with the series and be there. And I have a million other projects. I know Meg Donnelly does a lot of Disney stuff. So that tends to happen. So not having her tied down to five movie deal or whatever it ends up being works out better in everyone's favor, especially having Millie playing Kara, where you can have her when she's young enough and she can be Kara for six movies, you know, without worrying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, good move. Good choice. We have Lewis Pullman. Eyed to replace Steven Yeun. He is from Top Gun Maverick and Lessons in Chemistry. Neither movie did I see. I'm assuming you saw those movies.
Yeah, I haven't seen Lessons in Chemistry yet. That's the new Brie Larson TV show on Apple TV. And Top Gun Maverick, he plays Mustachioed Bob.
Okay.
No, wait, not Mustachioed Bob. No, he plays the guy with the glasses, Bob. There we go.
Okay.
Maverick really, but besides Maverick, you know, Top Gun being Tom Cruise's vehicle, they had a bunch of like those like new recruits, and Bob ended up being one of them. He was just like one of the younger guys, like Glenn Powell.
Okay. Yeah, the kid from Fantastic was in that movie, wasn't he?
The kid from Fantastic, Miles Teller. Yeah, I think he's older than you, dude.
I'm sorry.
The kid.
Yeah, like
how old is this guy? Oh, he's only 36. Yeah, how are you? Oh, 36?
He's a little older than I am. I'm 35.
Okay, so the kid from Fantastic Four. Yeah. The older than you guy. No, he's got a baby face for sure.
That's what it is. I'm like, I'm, and you know what it is? I'm bad when it comes to actors and actresses. I'm like, oh, they're this. No, they're like my age or younger or way older, and they just look young.
Oh yeah, so dude, it's crazy. Like, what's his face? Young Gravy is a year older than me.
That's insane.
Crazy.
That's actually crazy. Insane.
He looks like, but he's also like 6'5", so that's why he just looks like an adult.
I mean, true. True.
He's a tall boy.
No, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, I forget who we were talking about last week for Century, but that was one of the other rumors. But now we got Lewis Pullman. But again, it's just rumors. He's eyeing up. They asked him. We'll see what it shakes out.
Yeah. You know,
we'll see. It looks like after Steven Yeun dropped out, they're typecasting as white-haired, white-blonde guy.
You know how I
feel. It's interesting to see that reaction.
You know how I feel about that.
I mean, I'm okay with whoever as long as they do good. But I understand wanting to not, like, erase people. Because there's, what's it, ginger side.
Yeah.
I'm not a ginger. I'm not on any side. I don't care. But a lot of ginger characters end up becoming
black.
Swapped races.
Well, so. They become black.
Most of them become black. There was one recently that was Asian. I thought it was interesting. I was like, oh.
What movie was that?
I couldn't tell you. It was in an article.
Oh, okay.
Not to be that guy. It was in an article. I remember it. But it's 99%. Yeah, it's the other way. But, you know. I'm all for if the actor's good, they get the part.
You know, but, you know. I know. But he's eyed up for Steven Yeun for Century, to replace Steven Yeun for Century, which is fine because Steven Yeun better be working on Invincible lines in interim.
Yeah, Thunderbolts is going through some wild changes. We got more casting mix-up as well today.
So I'm going to butcher this name. Io Embideri. Embideri?
Edie Beery,
thank you. She's from The Bear and Big Mouth, Exis Marvel's Thunderbolts, and Geraldine Viswanathane.
Viswanathane, the last bit is Nathan. It's Viswanathan, I believe.
From Blockers and Miracle Workers. She was the young girl, and she was the, oh my god, in, is Blockers Cock Blockers with,
Yeah, she plays John Cena's daughter.
Okay, cool. She plays in a mystery role. What role could she be?
I was thinking she was going to be a bad guy.
Yeah, but like, so
just like a random ass bad guy, maybe like Silver Banshee. But
they are,
man, it just says mystery role.
Yeah, but they are very stark, different looking women. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it could just be like a nothing burger character. True. That is going to be enhanced by these two rising star actresses.
True. It could be
her. Old now one of the two.
Like they did with Ghost.
Because, yeah. Ghost was like a nothing burger character. And to be fair, the movie didn't do much, but the movie did, you know, put Ghost in a movie, which was cool.
Yeah. So. It's true. Well, like, that's really what it is. It's very much like one of those. I don't know who she could be because they are very, very different looking ladies. So it's kind of hard to be like, oh, they're kind of going for a theme or a vibe type of thing. But now I don't know. Like, I can't think of like a character that they're already, that she's going to be playing.
I mean, she could be like a tech correspondent. She could be like a younger looking villain character. We don't know, like, so the movie is billed as some of the villains from the MCU, but it's all the Captain America and Black Widow people, and then Valentina.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, oh no, and then Ghost. Ghost is the odd man out, really. Everyone else that was at least in a Captain America or Black Widow project, and then you just have Ghost from Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Which is weird, but hey.
I mean, but that's that is one of the perfect characters to put in a movie like this, because they walk through walls. So
also,
this is a good choice for them to have.
Yeah. And honestly, I do think there is a better, again, I already said this should be a better lineup, but whatever, that's my own
thing. I mean, it's entirely possible that she's going to be playing like some guardian of Century, if Century is the bad guy / like target for them to go pick up.
She could also be Misty Knight.
I don't think they're going to be replacing Misty Knight. I think with everything going on with the Defenders, I think they're going to keep it on a maybe. We don't recast, at least for a little bit, especially because they did announce, I mean, I guess we didn't really talk about it, but we will now briefly. They did announce that they are doing an Iron Fist project, and it'll be female-led. A lot of people are thinking bring Colleen back or do like a Daughters of the Dragon thing, so have Misty and Colleen show up in the Iron Fist show.
Yeah.
Right now, Finn Jones is not set up to come back. Nobody's really set up to come back, but having it being female-led, if it's supposed to take place in current day, it's probably going to be Colleen.
Yeah, but...
just makes sense, at least given that they've recanonized everything.
Yeah, but the problem is, like, you don't have to make it where it's a female led, just make it Iron.
Well, that's just what they said.
Yeah, no. I do. Like, a part of me, like, if you could make it female led, just make it Daughters of the Dragon. Just be Daughters of the Dragon. You know, instead of making it
they might be calling it Iron Fist Project just for like the business people, where it's like, oh yeah, we're using the Iron Fist. He's recognizable. And then instead of just saying, well, we're doing a Daughters of the Dragon project, people will be like, what?
True.
So I think just initially in like the pitches for like the business to get funding, calling it an Iron Fist project, especially if you are going to do Daughters of the Dragon with Colleen being the current Iron Fist in the MCU through a technicality, then sure.
Yeah.
I'm down. I just want more from that like little street level stuff, especially if they're billing Kingpin as the Thanos of street level, which is what they keep saying.
Yeah. Well, I do think they're going to make some changes and work around it. It's still we're still very early.
Oh, it could easily get like thrown into the garbage or turned into an animated show.
Yeah, I do want them to do. The only other thing I think of, if they make the little girl they introduced in the comics for Iron Fist.
Yeah, I forget what her name is. She popped up in one of the digital ones as well.
Yeah, Lei Pai.
Yeah, I think so. I think something like that.
Make her as an adult as Iron Fist. And make Danny the secondary character.
Yeah, that could be cool. He's training like a new Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Like, he somehow loses it. I mean, he gives it up. If they keep it canon, he gives it up. And then him and Ward go to wherever to like train or to hunt somebody down. I forget exactly what happens. So it could be like they pick up like the kid who's supposed to be the next Iron Fist, and then maybe like, I don't know, Colleen dies off screen, depending on what they want to do. You know what I mean? Like, if they are going to do Danny Rand trains, if they want to keep everything canon, then follow that. But we'll see.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have plenty of time.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, this show just got, like, put into production. Like, 2 days ago, they were like, we're doing an Iron Fist thing.
Yeah.
So we'll see how far it goes if they have to, like, mess things around. It could easily turn into Heroes for Hire as well, and just be Iron Fist and Luke Cage.
True.
Or, I mean, Iron Fist, Luke Cage, Colleen, Misty, because Heroes for Hire is blah, blah, blah. But,
I mean, no.
If it's not female-led,
I mean, no, because
it could be Heroes for Hire.
Do you remember the 2000s Heroes for Hire book?
No, that was during Secret Avengers. The Civil War.
Before that.
Where they had, like, the Heroes for Hire with Misty and Colleen right before Daughters of the Dragon. Yeah.
Yeah, before that. When it was, like, her. It was, like, Colleen, Misty, and Black Cat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can do that.
You could.
You know. And that would be a cool way to bring back Black Cat into the MCU.
I think they're going to save that for Spider-Man. But no, I think Black Cat was one of the characters that Sony was trying to use, so I don't know if Marvel even has the rights to that.
Well, yeah, it's always the fun part.
So far, Madame Web is projecting to be the worst comic book movie opening of all time. So we don't know how long the Sonyverse has until Marvel finally gets its grubby little mitts on it.
It can't. So this is what everyone keeps saying, and I go, they make too much money from the license. Marvel can't, even if every Sony movie bombs, let's say they make 20 movies and every single one is a freaking stinker, it doesn't matter because every time like Marvel wants to do a Spider-Man movie, they have to give money to Sony to make that movie. And they keep raising the price on it. They can't just outright buy it. That's why they will never give up the licensing rights. It's like,
I don't think Marvel's going to buy it. I think Sony's going to be like, please do better movies. We'll lower our prices.
I mean, it's possible. I mean, if they want to do that, but doesn't they don't care. It's free money every time they use the license.
I mean, I think when they start losing money on these deals, they're going to lower some of their rates.
Maybe.
For licensing out the character. I don't think they're ever going to give it up.
No, because like I said,
but I think they're going to be very lenient on allowing Marvel to use their characters for in the future.
Yeah, and again, like I don't know the 100% legalese, because I don't know who gets what percentage of like from what box office and you know stuff like that. But I do know there is like a contingency when it comes to things like merchandising, and that we know the rights for the games are all Sony exclusive because of this deal. You know, stuff like that. So I don't know whether, you know, whatever it is, you know, if they're making, let's say they have to pay, Marvel has to pay Sony $8,000. I'm just making up numbers to use Spider-Man. Mm. And then they get like 30% of the gross from the box office. You know, they don't care. Because that pretty much pays for them to have fun money. I think the Spider-Man Sony movies are just fun money movies. They just put out so they can legally hold on to the licenses still.
Yeah, and they're also trying to make like any movie that could, like any character that is a nothing character that they can turn into something is you know, like they tried to do Disco Hustler. They tried to do El Muerto.
Yeah.
They wanted to do a Silver Sable movie.
See, that one
Silver Sable's a little bit more high tier than the other ones, but yeah, an example of a lesser known Marvel character. You know, they wanted to do those types of movies, but it's just like, no, stop. What are you doing?
No.
You know?
No. It's just like, you don't have to go like that hard with it. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Just make content. You can make good content.
Yeah, just make good content. Get good directors. But I feel like it's such like a poor taste in everybody's mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think all comic movies right now have that feel. Regardless.
Oh, yeah. Somebody I know said, I'm anti-Marvel. And I was like, why?
I get it.
Like, because of the content machine? Fucking.
I get it.
Don't watch them.
Again, you don't have to. Don't watch it. You're right. Mm-hmm. Don't watch it. You know, there is like I do think people are, and we knew this would come to a point eventually where we would hit a point where there's like almost an oversaturation of content. And again, you give people more content, they can be more picky and choosy. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. And then again, this is not to say things are bad or good or whatever. Your flavors and your taste are going to be different. Mine are different from yours. Who's different from everyone else's? It is what it is. But
yeah, I just think a lot of it is coming just from the content machine where they were putting out so much stuff and not having a lot of substance and just like cranking these guys out. I think there will be a reckoning soon. I don't think the MCU will die. Yeah. And if it does, okay. But, oh no, I dropped a piece of candy. Sorry. Oh, my dog, you get it. But but I think eventually we will see a very large decline in Marvel content. And this year is going to be one of the big testers on Marvel content itself, because while we did get Echo dropped all at once, and I believe we're getting What If, Ironheart, and one other MCU show.
X-Men. Well, MCU, I don't know. Kind of.
Yeah, MCU. I mean, technically, X-Men 97 counts, but the only movie that's coming out is Deadpool 3.
Yeah.
unless they change something in the schedule or put or just drop Armor Wars if there's even done. You know what I mean? I don't know how far they are on it, but like just drop something on Disney Plus or like a special that's could have come out during one of the holidays that they haven't announced yet.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. This is a testing year. I mean, this is the first. This is going to be a year that we're finally into that gap of time where we are affected by the writer strike that happened.
Mm-hmm. That's why AO had to drop out of Thunderbolts. They had a project that was being rescheduled during the time they were going to start shooting Thunderbolts that had prior commitments before the strike.
Yeah. You know, it is what it is. I do think we are going to hit this weird like lull. But also, I go back and look at the older MCU stuff and go, yeah, we were only getting one movie every year and a half to 2 years. You know what I mean? Yeah,
sometimes two movies if it was like Avengers and something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I just think this is, again, it comes down to the more you give people and the quality's not there, you know, people aren't going to be happy with it. You're like, because you're expecting them just to take whatever you give them. And I said this years ago, I don't think you don't have to love every Marvel movie to love the MCU. You don't.
Facts.
You know what I mean? If you love the Ant-Man movies, you can love the Ant-Man movies and hate Black Panther, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean you don't like the MCU as a whole. It's just, it is your flavor, you know? You know I don't like the Thor movies, but I love the Captain. I think the Captain America movies are the best part of the MCU. You know?
Oh, the Captain America movies are crazy.
But, you know, there are people that don't like them. You know, I get it. They're wrong, but I get it. But, you know what I mean? Like, that's fine. But I still like the MCU as a whole, even when I am down about, when I do talk down about other projects and other like shows or some of the movies, when you look at the MCU as a whole, which one day we might do a retrospect on certain phases, but like it doesn't mean I don't like the MCU as a whole. I love the MCU as a whole. I think it's really great. But it's okay. It's just like comics. You don't walk into their comic shop every Wednesday and buy every single Marvel comic because you read Spider-Man. You don't.
Yeah, sometimes you get some winners, sometimes you get some losers.
Yeah, it is what it is. You know, but you can fix that by not giving people so many options. Just going, well, this is what it is. Suck it up, people.
Yeah, I feel like if we only got one Marvel movie a year, or maybe even two, if you wanted to do like first 6 months, last 6 months,
yeah.
And then, you know, not talking TV, not talking specials, not talking animated, just purely theatrically released films that aren't event Avengers films.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to release Avengers 5, you can release two other films that year as well. Sure, whatever. But, because Avengers 5 will be an event. But, if you want to do two movies again every year at most, you know, I think people will, you know, respond to that a lot better. Because I remember it being, like, an event going to see Marvel movies.
It was.
Like, oh shit, new Marvel movies dropping, let's go. Not even just Avengers, just any of them. Nowadays, what was the most recent one?
Marvels.
I don't know. The Marvels. I was in a almost empty theater for the Marvels.
That's why.
And I saw it opening day. To be fair, it was Thursday, not Friday, but still.
But, dude, I remember going to midnight showings, going to when they changed the midnight showings into, like, Thursday evening ones, going to see.
Yeah, 7 p.m.
Dude, I went to see Iron Man at 5 in the evening. I saw Ant-Man and Wasp at, like, on a Thursday at, like, 8 o'clock. And it was jam packed, you know.
Wow,
it is what it is. They made it where it's like, oh man, I have to see this movie, and it's because I want to see it. Now I have, you know, four TV shows, two movies, you know, and a special that all matter, and they're all in the same year.
Yeah, it's a bit much.
Yeah, and it's like the quality is not there. You know what I mean? Like we talked about Echo. Oh, actually, before I rant about Echo, Echo season 2 is quietly in doubt. We were talking about this last week, how well it's doing, because we did a whole episode about Echo, so go back and listen to that episode. But right now, they don't know the future of the character. Some of the screenwriters have come out and said that they weren't approached for anything yet. but also the show.
Yeah, I mean, they said Marvel Studios outwardly said that they are open to having Maya Lopez come back, the character, not the actress. I forget the actress name, Alcoa Cox, I believe.
Yeah.
They do say they want her back, and we were talking. I want to say it was the start of this episode, but it easily could have been off mic.
It's off mic.
That, you know, coming back for Daredevil or an episode of something would be good, just to have the character sprinkled throughout, especially if Kingpin's going to be the big bad. Kingpin's got beef with Echo. Echo can't not show up if Kingpin's got beef.
Exactly.
Doesn't have to show up in Echo, but doesn't have to show up in Daredevil Born Again, but has to show up in whatever climactic Kingpin fight.
Exactly.
Whether it's the end of Daredevil, whether it's the end of Daredevil season 2, or a Daredevil movie Kingpin thing, whatever.
Right. And I do think that the Echo news, and we talked about last week about another show that there was, She-Hulk, it was in doubts.
I think Daredevil Born Again would be a good spot to throw She-Hulk in real quick, because she's supposed to be popping up in Captain America 4, who got a new suit, by the way, and it looks dumb. We'll talk about that in just a sec.
Yes.
But it would be cool if Foggy and Karen are either busy on another case or are, because they're coming back, the originals, we talked about them. And also Bullseye's coming back, Biddle. So we'll see. I think, like, if Karen and Foggy are unavailable, or like it's a superhuman trial and Matt's like, oh, I know somebody, let me call She-Hulk in real quick, and She-Hulk travels from LA to New York, that could be cool.
Yeah, it's fine.
Just to have like one character, because like, oh, Daredevil interacted with this person, why not have them come back?
And then,
unless it's a weird timeline, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so we don't know exactly where Daredevil falls, and like, compare, you know, kind of where it does.
The way that you're setting up Daredevil is you could have like some of these side characters sprinkle into one episode. Like Luke Cage made his first appearance in Jessica Jones, not even his own show.
Yeah.
I know it was supposed to set up a Luke Cage, but like, he still showed up first in Jessica Jones in like one or two episodes. So why not do one episode? Because they're going to be like 40 minutes each. One episode, you know, it's like the Arrowverse. Ray Palmer shows up for one episode in Flash season 8 for almost no reason. He's just there. And you're like, okay.
That's the thing. Like, you can do that.
Stuff like that.
And I do think you can do that, especially with a character like
Echo. It's an interconnected universe for a reason.
Yeah. To be fair, that doesn't mean every character has, you know, a million characters don't have to show up in it. You don't want cameo porn. You know what I mean?
No, but the ones that make sense, right. You know.
Exactly.
Some of the Defenders, She-Hulk, Echo, those characters make sense for
Daredevil. Yeah.
We know Punisher's coming
back. Yeah. They don't need to show up in the show, but like, if they can, if they do, it's not weird. You know, you're not having like Captain.
Yeah, it's not shoehorned.
Right, you're not having Captain America show up.
Yeah, unless it's like an Easter egg specifically, like when Cap showed up in that little training video for Spider-Man.
Right.
Or like if they're doing an ad campaign for like U.S. Agent or something, it's one of those old things that's still on the TV before it got taken down, before the video of him chopping that guy's head off. You can have Wyatt Russell come in, do a quick like TV spot and be like, look, it's interconnected still. Remember him? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, but we'll see, you know. And yes, the Captain America suit looks weird. I don't know why they redesigned it.
It looks, I mean, dude, when they had it at the end of the Falcon and Winter Soldier, oh my goodness. Perfect. Perfect suit. What happened? It looks like the suit from Avengers.
It's very, very blue.
Like it's like blue and like smooth.
But to be fair, that is a leaked image. And leaked images don't look great when it comes to suits, because it's not like...
Yeah, we could, like, it's also not like a leaked image, like, of, like, on set. It's leaked promo art.
Yeah.
So it could easily just be, like, high concept art and then could get changed once they try to put it on him.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. It looks like a little bit of him mixed with Cap from Avengers.
Yeah.
And while that's not a bad thing, eh... Oh, apparently it's from an Amazon ad.
Oh, that means it's definitely just like concept.
Yeah, but it's concept with his face in it, so it's still something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still concept art by itself, so it could look better in person. Maybe some of it will be a little bit bulkier.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a problem when they do like those leaked images about like suits. I'm like, they don't look great.
Yeah. Well, it's advertising for the next Marvel Collector's Core box. It's going to be based on Captain America Brave New World, which will ship out in March.
That's right.
Which is interesting, because that movie is not coming out till next year.
Yeah, but I think
the Collector's box will probably just be a Funko Pop of Falcon.
Yeah, probably.
Or Captain
America. Or maybe the leader.
Yeah, or it could be Harrison Ford, Thunderbolt Ross, like Red Hulk.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's probably going to be Cap. Why would you not get Cap?
Who knows?
Hey, man, I'm excited for that one, too. That'll come out. Everybody's coming back for that one. Isaiah Bradley's reprising his role. Carly Lumbly?
Yeah.
He's coming back to play Bradley, so I think we'll get the Patriot spin out from that, especially if Kamala and Kate Bishop come to recruit Joaquin Torres.
We'll see. So this
could be interesting.
We'll see. Like, we have so much news about Thunderbolts, more than we have about Captain America, and Captain America comes out before Thunderbolts. Like, Captain America leads into Thunderbolts.
It's supposed to, but they could easily switch it around.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, we have so much news about, like, oh, what's going on with the Thunderbolts set and the people. Like, it's just, like, and to be fair, I do like this. I do like the kind of mindless speculation about Captain America because there's really not a lot of info besides, like, some confirmed casting. And even then, it's, like, not really 100% confirmed about, like, the guests showing up, which I love and I miss that.
No, the only people they have confirmed are Isaiah Bradley, the leader, Thunderbolt Ross, this new Israeli superhero called Sabra.
Is that new? She's
and old. Then, no, but I mean new to the MCU.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and then, oh my goodness. And then obviously Danny Ramirez as Kid Falcon or New Falcon, and then Sam Wilson Cap. So the only other casting we know is they said that She-Hulk's supposed to be in it, but that hasn't been updated since the initial break. So it right. could easily have been like reworked because of scheduling or because they don't believe in the She-Hulk project anymore or whatever that they're going to do. But
Fan
you know, it did theory. Seem like a weird place to put her, but because of the leader and because of Thunderbolt Ross, sure.
Yeah, but I get it
a little bit.
But. I get it because it's like, but also maybe because of fan reaction to the She-Hulk show, they might have changed it.
Yeah, I would. I mean, to be fair, I'd rather see Mark Ruffalo show up because Bruce Banner has a connection to Tim Blake Nelson's The Leader because he fought him technically in the Incredible Hulk movie. And you can even have a line where Tim Blake Nelson says, Bruce, you look very different. And he can go, well, so do you. You're big and green or something like that. Because originally Tim Blake Nelson wasn't Green Man.
No, he wasn't. He was like just a scientist that was
he was just a regular dude who was named something Stern. Samuel Stern?
Samuel Stern, yeah.
Yeah, so now he's going to be green, so they can easily make a joke about, oh, you don't look like Edward Norton anymore.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
So that could be a fun little thing. But, you know, given that Bruce is currently going through daddy issues off screen, you know, we'll see how everything rolls out with Mark Ruffalo.
That was so stupid. Such a waste.
I mean, I think a Hulk being a dad movie or show could be very interesting because Bruce Banner himself has daddy issues.
Mm-hmm.
But because of Universal, we'll only get things like the five to 10 minutes of Mark Ruffalo we got in like the 1.5 episodes of She-Hulk.
Yeah, and
where he's just being a goofball.
Yeah.
I mean, when he was training her, he was being pretty good, but then he was goofy after that.
That training montage.
Whenever he shows up, he's like, oh, I'm Bruce Banner. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, I'm like, sure, man. But that is.
He's turning into John C. Reilly.
Right. I know. But that is should be it for the news, right? Unless you have anything else to add or that we missed or.
That's all I got. We added some stuff. We're good.
All right. That's it for news, guys. We are doing our, if you don't know from the thumbnail, we are doing our amazing awards. This year, we're doing it a little bit differently. We're not doing it in two parts. We're just doing it one big part. So this might be a little longer.
Mostly because we're very late.
Yeah, it is because we're very late. And also, it did help because we are late. It just also because of how some of our collecting attitudes have changed. We changed up the list a lot. So we have now 20 books to go over real quick. And we'll start from
10 each.
Yes. So Hunter, you want to hit me with your first pick of the year?
Sure. Well, starting at my number 10, we'll go up.
All right. Mine's in no particular order, by the way.
Oh, mine's in order only because I put it in order because I thought you'd want to do it in order.
Oh, no. I was going
to. I'll still start at 10.
Yeah.
Because it's here. It's going to be the Jurassic League by Daniel Warren Johnson and Juan Gideon from DC Comics. Justice League, but dinosaurs. That's all I got to say. It's good. It's fun. It's stupid. If you like the Justice League, it's a cool, interesting Elseworlds. It's been a canonized Elseworld because it popped up briefly in Dark Crisis.
Yes.
Or 118. One of the most recent events. Yep. Yeah, yeah. And the art's just super clean. I know, it's just fun. It's got a good Superman like kind of mythos to it as well.
He's a giant.
That's always good when someone can nail a Superman mythos.
He's a blue giant brontosaurus.
Yeah, man, it's cool. But I don't know, the way they characterize, I mean, the Trinity is characterized very well, but Aquaman, Green Lantern, and Flash are a little off, but they still fit the part for like the dinosaurs that they are and the roles that they play in the story. But it's very tongue in cheek, so okay. I'll let it off with that. It's fun. It's a comedy book for sure, but it does have a heart. That's a lot of Daniel Warren Johnson, though.
Yes. So my number 10 is Big Game from Mark Millar and Image Comics. This is the capstone of Miller World. It worked very well that this was the final book in his run right before him moving to
at least from Image.
It's from Image before he moved to Dark Horse. It is a pseudo sequel to Nemesis Reloaded and a spiritual sequel to Wanted. And it is the cornerstone that sets up that the universe is truly connected of all the Miller World projects, minus the Unfunnies. until he makes Unfunnies canon, I will have to say that all the time.
Yeah, man, he just refuses to talk about it. That book is
fucking frightening.
Understandably so.
Yes.
But still funny where he's like, nah, I still made it and everything else is canon, but like, shut up.
Yeah, exactly. He's like 2 seconds away making the Ultimate Comics tied into it, closer than the Unfunnies would be.
If Marvel gave him permission, he'd easily bring over his Ultimate Fantastic Four stuff.
Oh my god. He'd go ham. But
yeah, he'd be like, the maker's mine.
But what it's a big over the top crisis style book, which you guys know I love. And it is the entirety of the Miller World getting together to fight against the Fraternity and against Nemesis, who's hunting down the heroes of this universe. It's really cool. It helps if you read all of Miller World. You get to see all the Easter eggs and all the fun stuff to talk about and characters that show up. But if you don't, not a big deal. It is a cool, like, just a cool superhero mega event book without a lot of continuity for you to worry about. I do recommend reading Nemesis and Nemesis Reloaded and Wanted beforehand, but it's a great book. If you love over-the-top violence and action and, like, nonstop insanity, this is a great book to read. Hunter, what's your number 9? Actually, you know what? I'll do my number 9 next.
Sounds good.
All right, so I'm going to do another indie book. I'm going to do Plot Holes by Sean Gardner Murphy, published by Massive Comics. What's cool about this miniseries, it was a series about different genre characters all living together and working together to be editors. Their job was to make sure books were published on this website and the books were made. If they weren't made or had major things that don't make sense, their job was to destroy the book from within the story context. So it's really cool to see, like, you have this guy who is based on manga, a Calvin Hobbes ripoff. You have, like, one of those old school romance novels, but she's a vampire. You have a generic, like, 90s dark brooding anti-hero, supervillain hero character. And you have the main character, Inkslayer, who is pretty much like a self-insertion for Sean Gardner Murphy. But it's really cool. The art, one, I love its art style. And two, the book is actually really cool because they each issue, like, there is a through plot that I do not want to spoil because it does set up. It's like the big twist that happens at the end of issue one into issue two. What really is the through plot is like them working on this mysterious virus that's following them through books. but also what caused this virus. And the fact that they're actually living characters, and that's what's really cool. And there's a lot of philosophical talk about the relationship that readers have to the characters that they read, and vice versa, with the world that the characters read have effect on each other and themselves and onto the reader. And one of the best lines in the book is, do you think when they close the book that we all just go to sleep? We don't. We still continue to live our lives even beyond the borders of the page. And it's a really cool line. Great book. Definitely pick it up. I think the trade's coming out this year. But it ended December of last year. So definitely go pick that book up. It's all out. I love it. Hunter, what's your next one?
Well, mine is Council of Frogs. It is an independent book from Matthew Emmons. His publishing company is an independent publisher called Second at Best Press. He's made plenty of other graphic novels, but we'll talk about those at different times. I'm talking about Council of Frogs. I backed this one on Kickstarter, and it was delivered to me, I want to say, in like October, but it was one of the ones that I got my hands on and read immediately. It's 146 pages, so it's a nice hefty book. It's a fantasy graphic novel about a tiny frog whose father is like a dying knight warlock guy, and he sends him on a mission to find another warlock so they can keep the Council of Frogs, like their little like village, alive. Okay. Because it's the magic barrier is going to die with their father, in quotes. So this one brave frog gets to go out on an adventure to find his to find buddies to help protect the grove, essentially. And it's a very cool, surreal, like, I would describe it as like a sad boy book. It's one of those books that's just like eerie and like just gives you no hope. If that makes any sense. It's just like a nice calm, even though it's anxiety inducing because it's like the end of the world for these little frog guys. It's very tense. And I don't know. I just like the art style a lot. Matthew Emmons did another book I picked up, I want to say 2022, called The Gardener. Very similar post-apocalyptic style, but instead of fantasy, it's more like grunge punk.
Okay.
But, you know, Council of Frogs, it's a cute, fun read about a little frog who goes on an adventure. Definitely check it out. It's super fun.
Nice.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, so I guess going based off of your, you'll take the next one. I will get the next one. Yes. On number 8 with Blood Force Trauma from Dark Horse. It was a book that issue 1 came out on Kickstarter, I want to say a few years ago, and they finally got it picked up at Dark Horse. The authors are Jake Smith and Hiram Corbett. I forget who does the art, but it's one of them. And it's like video games and Street Fighter, but in the future, in a like comedy RoboCop meets Blade Runner world, where this super hyper violent TV show called Blood Force Trauma has a bunch of the universe's strongest warriors beating the crap out of each other. And this one guy, he I forget what his name is. I think it's like Laser Skull Mohawk or something. He's got like a chainsaw laser hand. It's like super crazy epic nonsense. He wants to retire. And he chooses to give his powers, and the person who wins, this random guy who is just like a fan, and he has no money, he lives with his sister, he's just like this gamer kid who like does Twitch streams.
Right.
And he chooses him to be his successor, and he's just not someone who knows how to fight, so he gets trained by this Black Dynamite Bruce Lee style character. Who like just goes, all right, I'm gonna live in your house and I'm gonna train you because I'm homeless right now. And it's very fun, it's very camp, it's very cool. It gives off Stranger Things vibes because of the aesthetic, because it's like a nice 80s pop.
Okay.
I don't know if you got your phone pulled up, but you should pull up Blood Force Trauma. You'll get exactly what I'm talking about.
I have my phone. Yeah, next to me, 1 second. Well, you can. Yeah.
Their independent company is called Dead Gremlin Comics. That's what they originally published it under, but now then they shoot it over to Dark Horse for their graphic novel. But yeah, man, Blood Force Trauma, very good, very fun. If you like hyper-violence and like cheesy colors and just nonsense, this is your book.
I pulled it up.
You'll find a common theme for most of my books, a lot of nonsense this year.
That's fair.
Got heavy into nonsense. But yeah, Blood Force Trauma, super fun. At its core, it does have like a nice, like, you know, believe in yourself and you can do anything kind of story. But it you know, it pokes fun at that by, like, every time the character gets, like, a one-up, something even, like, stranger happens, and he's like, come on. Like, what? How am I going to fight this guy? That's very cool.
That's fair. That's
what
fair.
Is your numero 8?
My number 8 is Batman Santa Claus Silent Night, written by Jeff Parker and published by DC Comics. This is a fun weekly. Technically, it did only end January 1st, the week of January 1st, because it was pushed back by a week. It did finish in 2024, technically. It did finish technically in 2024. It is a pseudo in canon of mini event in which Krampus has unleashed monsters and demons across the DC universe. And you find out that one of Batman's teachers is Santa Claus, and it's Santa and the Justice League teaming up to fight Krampus. It's really fun. It's kind of campy at points, but it's like a stupid, like, Santa. I like it a lot because the covers are drawn by Dan Mora, and he did the Klaus book for Boom a long time ago. It's very, like, young Santa teaming up with Batman and Justice League to fight monsters for 4 issues. It's great. And Superman's, like, there's, like, a whole thing about, like, them trying to keep the secret from Clark that, like, Bruce knew Santa. And he goes, oh, he's going to find out. And he just shows up and goes, you knew Santa? And I'm like, it's funny and stupid. And it's, like, it's a cool holiday book if you're looking for, like, a gift for someone or, like, just for yourself if you want a fun, like, lazy in canon DC book that's fun and action paced and just like a great read from start to finish. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And my next one, my number 7 is Predator versus Wolverine, written by Benjamin Percy. Yeah. This out of canon mini event is a team up and crossover we never thought we would have. We all kind of hoped for when Marvel got the license to Predator and Alien.
Oh, I knew they would do Wolverine versus Predator once Marvel got it. I was just waiting for it to happen.
Dude.
Next up is Punisher. Not officially. I'm saying they should. Next up is Punisher. It's not official. I don't know anything. But if it happens.
You heard it here first. This book is wild. It is ultra violent. It is over the top. It's everything you wanted it to. You want a Wolverine Predator book to be. What's really cool is every issue seems to be a parody of one of the Predator movies. So the first one is Predator 1. The second one is Predator 2. And then the rest are like, they bleed together between like in canon, like, events for X-Men. So one of them is like the Brood Saga, but instead of the Brood Saga, it's the Predator showing up at the house. It's really cool. It's super violent. It ties like Wolverine's origin from when he was a kid, a teenager in Canada, all the way till pseudo present day, and how the Predator, Yawati?
I forget how they pronounce it, but yeah, you're close.
How they have influenced Wolverine's life, and like Team X, and like the entire second issue is just the first Predator movie, but instead of it being Arnold Schwarzenegger and his team, it's Team X in the woods.
Yeah, that's Maverick and Wolverine and Sabretooth, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's really cool. If you want like a super violent, over the top book, again, awesome. Pick it up. You should. Hunter, what is your number 6?
7. It's seven, number sorry. 7. Yes. That's where we're at. My number 7 is Serial Sweet Darkness from Ahoy Comics, written by Mark Russell with art by Peter Senjeberg. He's the guy that did Starman, the early stuff for Starman.
Okay.
Yeah, Sweet Tooth is... I'm sorry. Serial Sweet Darkness is a... it's... I found out about this book while listening to Comics and Chronic, our boy Tony. They were interviewing Mark Russell about, oh man, I forget exactly what book he was promoting. It might have been this, but he was promoting some book and they had him on for an interview. And he was talking about this at some point. I don't know if it was for this, but it was about it. And he was saying that this started out as like just stuff he would do on his personal Facebook for like whoever was friends with him and like just following him. He would just like post these random like prose stories he made up about like, the Marquise de Coco, which is Count Chocula, and Frankenberry and all of like his buddies, in like a serial Game of Thrones universe. And eventually, he created enough lore about it to where he wanted to pitch it out and make like smaller little, like tiny comics with it. So he ended up making like 3 like 8-page stories. And then Ahoy asked him if he had anything else he wanted to put out after, I want to say, Second Son, whatever the one, Second Coming, the Jesus Superman.
Second Coming, yeah, Second Coming.
That they did, yeah. So after that, they pulled, they had each of those chapters show up in the Edgar Allan Poe anthologies.
Right.
And then they finished it with a 3-part conclusion in this Sweet Darkness trade paperback that just wraps up the stories that they told in the anthologies and in the short stories. And it's just, it's another tongue-in-cheek. It's like, if you know, you know. Like, there's the Quaker Oats guy who shows up, and you know, like the honey bee from Honey Nut Cheerios is there, but he's like a pope of honey instead. And it's just super duper fun. I would definitely say, if you like serial mascots, this is definitely the book to get. But if you just like classic horror, it's based off of obviously the, you know, Count Chocula and serial mascots, but it's universal. You know, it's Dracula, it's Wife of Dracula, it's, you know, leprechauns and werewolves and monsters like Frankenstein. It's just nice, stupid, serial, tongue-in-cheek, Game of Thrones. It's good. Definitely check it out. Mark Russell knows what he's doing. He describes it as What We Do in the Shadows meets Monster Squad. So,
oh, cool.
Take that as you will.
All right.
But yeah, so my number 6, Shirtless Bear Fighter 2. Comedy, 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 man. I'm a big comedy fan for my comic books. So Shirtless Bear Fighter 2. Same creative team as the original. It's Jody Layup and where is the artist's last? Where's the artist's name? I can't find. Oh, there it is. Neil Vendrell, and then Dave Johnson did a bunch of covers and colors with Spicer, his boy. So it's a follow up to the original Shirtless Bear Fighter, but it takes the stakes up to a million, where we finally find out the origin of Shirtless Bear Fighter. Where his mom, a regular human hippie woman, made love with a celestial Ursa Major star constellation as a living embodiment and made Shirtless Bear Fighter, kind of as like a Jesus, Harry Potter, Superman nonsense storyline. And it's just him saving the day again. In the first one, he had to save the day from evil corporations cutting down trees. And this one, he had to stop evil space bear gods. So, you know, a step up.
Yeah,
but it's got just the same amount of flapjacks, nudity, and beards that you can ask for. It's super fun. Definitely on the side of camp. That's going to be a recurring theme you'll see in the next like 3 or 4 that I have my list that we're going to get into some camp. But I definitely recommend Shirtless Bear Fighter 2. Even if you haven't checked out Shirtless Bear Fighter 1, it gives you a good enough breakdown of what happened in that one. But you don't even need to know, because this is his origin story. But, you know, it's always good to check out the original. But this one's super duper fun. Definitely check it out. And it's a bit longer than the original too, by 2 issues. So it's a nice chunky trade for a good price. Definitely check it out.
There you go. It's awesome.
What's your number 6?
My number 6 is Uncanny Spider-Man, written by Cy Spurrier, produced by Marvel Comics. Of the Fall. So what's great about this book is that it's part of the Fall of X line of books that all spun out of one of my other choices that are coming up later on the list. This one of, like, I think 5 or 6 books that came out, I think it's the best of them, honestly. I like that Nightcrawler, in order to hide from Orcus, becomes Spider-Man, and he's, like, in Manhattan talking to Peter, who gave him the suit, apparently, which is weird, because it's, like, a spare suit Peter apparently had with that design on it, which one day I hope
to... Sure.
I hope when they just feel that they feel that gap going, hey, this is the story of how Peter has a suit and why he has a suit.
Just make it a one shot.
Yeah, exactly.
They do that stuff all the time.
You know, but also with this, I do count X-Men Blue Origins as part of this.
Yeah, well, that'll be collected in the trade, yeah. So you can count it.
So I count that as,
I'll allow it.
Yeah, I count it as part of the story, because it does happen between issues 4 and 5 of it.
And that's the big reveal with Destiny and Mystique, yes. Right? About Nightcrawler's true parentage.
Yes. Rock and roll. Which is like the Claremont fanboy in me goes, yes, Claremont's idea finally came true.
Yeah, I remember people got up in a tizzy about it.
Yeah, because it's still overly convoluted because we still have to deal with Chuck Austin's Azazel story. Because it was
That's because they didn't let Claremont do what he wanted to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, but also in how they kind of recon it in this, it's still not that great of a recon, to be honest. But the rest of the series is great. It's him being like the best part of Nightcrawler is the on the surface he's a swashbuckling hero, but then deep inside it's the troubled soul, which is very much Daredevil like. He also gets
There's a lot of Catholic guilt that's involved in Daredevil and Nightcrawler.
Yeah,
so. At one point, Christian guilt. I don't know if Nightcrawler's Catholic.
Yes,
it could be Christian. Okay.
At one point,
it's Jesus, Jesus and God. Those are his guys.
At one point, he was supposed to be the Pope. That
dude, I would love Pope Nightcrawler.
It was
make it happen.
It was in Chuck Austin's run of X-Men when he was supposed to become Pope. He was like a bishop. And then he was supposed to become the Pope. And then they were like, you can't make Nightcrawler the actual Pope. but anyway, you go check out that run. It's really cool. That's also like where Angel has sex with Husk like in the middle of the air and just throws her clothes on their parents where they're like flying above them. Really weird scene. Anyway.
Yeah, it's part of a two-part storyline called Holy War in Uncanny X-Men 423 and 424 by Chuck Austin and Ron Garney. I got you.
Good looks. but back to Uncanny Spider-Man. It's really great. He is fighting against Spider-Man villains who are possessed by the Phalanx and who the main villain is the Vulture of all characters. It's really...
Spider-Man's first villain. So yeah. That's kind of cool.
I do like that. I do like it because they use Spider-Man's first villain as Uncanny Spider-Man's first villain. It's awesome. The only thing I do wish is that he kept his suit after the series into Fall of X. Into the Fall of
I mean,
the
he
House
should
of
just
X
take
series.
The mask off.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he could just take the mask off if they want to keep the suit, but maybe, I don't know, maybe Marvel Directive doesn't want that, but we'll see.
We'll see posted. I really hope he goes back to becoming the Uncanny Spider-Man. And make it a Spider-Man title. But it's great. It's really cool because like it's all the cool high-flying stuff, and it does continue on from Legion of X and from Onslaught Revelation. It's the third.
Yeah, a lot of the Krakoa stuff's doing a really good job at even if you're not following every book, if you're following a few books, they still have continuations. Like you go from Way of X to Legion to, I'm not counting the one shots, to Uncanny Spider-Man. You can follow Excalibur to Knights of X to Betsy Braddock or to wherever Gambit goes because he's usually the guy that's in every book.
Dark X-Men.
Yeah, he's in Dark X-Men currently, but before he was in Rogue and Gambit Power Play. I think that was the storyline.
Yeah, but
like, you could follow all these books. Like these characters, just you don't have to follow any of them, but you could follow one of them. You could follow all of them. It's just very cool that, you know, across title changes,
yes,
the storyline is still one big, like, Nightcrawler by Cy Spurrier kind of nonsense.
Yeah, and it's really cool. Like, the book is fantastically written. I think Cy Spurrier has a great take on Nightcrawler without watering down the character. He brings.
I think he might have some Catholic guilt going on.
I mean, he does bring Nightcrawler way back to basics, but you, for a character like Nightcrawler, you kind of need it after what you did to him in Legion of X.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, but it does make sense. It does. If you read the entirety of Cy Spurrier's run with Nightcrawler, it's the perfect trilogy. You know, but even if you just take Uncanny Spider-Man for what it is by itself, it's a great Nightcrawler book, and it's a cool Nightcrawler character study.
So. Well, Nightcrawler hasn't been alone, really, since his solo book when he got brought back to life by Chris Claremont. And even then, he wasn't always alone in those books. But ever since Krakoa, I mean, he's been on a main X-Men team ever since he's been revived. But ever since Krakoa, he's been, like, the leader of these teams. And he's been tasked with creating a mutant religion, basically, from scratch and, like, finding out the ordeals and how they deal with all that stuff. Now that they can be revived and death doesn't really matter to them. So bringing it from like one team to another team to solo, it's kind of interesting to see like what Nightcrawler does when he's alone.
No, it's really good. It really is a good book. So definitely pick that book up. My number five is going to be Ultimate Invasion / Ultimate Universe. It is a 4-issue and a 1-shot that sets up the new Ultimate Universe going forward. Issue 1 was plotted out by Donny Cates, but written by Jonathan Hickman. And issues 2, 3, and 4 and Ultimate Universe were all written by Jonathan Hickman. It is what happens if the Maker was to recreate the Ultimate Universe, and he had absolute control over every aspect of the universe from start to finish. It's this huge dystopian nightmare where there are no heroes. And what happens in a Marvel universe where there are no heroes, but a ton of villains, there will be the birth of heroes. And it's really great. I like the reimagining of some of the characters we've seen so far in the Ultimate Invasion book. Even though it is penned very differently if you read solicitations, where it's supposed to be like a Miles versus a Maker story, it's not. But that also goes back to originally being Donny Cates' book and not Jonathan Hickman's. It is cool to see Hickman in a background and in a playground that he is good at, which is like crazy over the top super science stuff. I think he excels very well at that. And because in saying that, it is very much like a big thought provoking science thing, because it's the Maker as the villain. It's really cool. If you like this X-Men stuff, you'll love this. Also, because it's a clean slate for continuity, you don't have to worry about having 60 years of character study to understand anything going on, except for the Maker is a bad guy. He's an alternate Reed Richards from a dead universe who is now trying to rebuild his old universe. And he succeeds. You know, it's really cool. And then, of course, you can follow it into this year's stuff, which is going to be Ultimate Spider-Man, which launched. You have Ultimate Black Panther coming out, and Ultimate X-Men so far, you know. But yeah, dude, it was a great mini series, and then the one shot is the pinnacle setup for what's going forward. And it sets up who the new Ultimates are going to be going forward. Oh yeah, also a new Ultimates book.
Yeah, the Ultimate Universe is popping off now. Ultimate Spider-Man is bonkers,
it's wild. But I would recommend, before you jump into the new Ultimate Universe, definitely read this miniseries and that one shot. It's a great book. Definitely pick this book up. It's kind of, if you're a fan of the old school Ultimate Universe, it really is if the Ultimate Universe was created today. You know, where it deals with the ideas of geopolitics and bigger players behind the scenes kind of making the world work for them while everyone else is their pawn. It's really cool. Very, very high thinking level style storytelling. Mm-hmm. All right. What's yours? What's your next one is?
My number five, another recommendation from the boys over at Comics and Chronic. It's Justice Warriors, another Ahoy book as well from Ben Clarkson and Matt Boers. It is a dystopian satire. I believe we covered the first issue on one of our recommended readings way back when it was first coming out in singles before I ended up moving. Yeah, it should have been released right around that time, but it finally was collected last year. And it's about a swamp fish cop and his new partner who's a piece of poop, and they just patrol Bubble City and make sure the scum stay out. It's basically like Judge Dredd meets satire.
Okay.
It's just super fun, another super campy book, but it's got more of a political message. It's all about like the future of consumerism and how views and clicks will affect us in the future and how we decide things. Like the mayor of Bubble City is also like a T-Pain Snoop Dogg character. So he's making music and like upset when his records don't sell. But then like he's like, but since I'm the mayor, I can rent a blimp and drop them. And then that means if I drop 1 million copies, that's 1 million people listening to my music. So it's very much just like it feels very what's the character from Fifth Element? He's like the black bar owner. Chris Tucker's character.
Yes.
Rudy. Ruby. Sorry. Yeah, Ruby Rod. It's one of those just like over the top, just fun music-y type characters with like some gang territory in the background. Like, how did he get here? You know, ruthlessness, which is very cool to see, especially because the main characters are supposed to be cops.
Okay.
But it's very cool to see. It just feels like just a fun political comedy with a little bit of violence.
That's fair.
So, oh, and it also makes fun of horoscopes and star signs. So that's fun too. My number four,
okay,
is Plush from Image Comics. And my boys, Doug Wagner, and I'm not even going to remember my boy's name, the other one. Oh, my goodness. I got to Google it. Daniel Hilliard. That's my guy. He's he's an artist that I really enjoy. I just forgot his name. It happens. But Plush is the, like, kind of ending to their weird serial killing trilogy that they've been doing over the last few years. It started out with Plastic. And then it went into Vinyl, and now it's Plush. It's interconnected. All the characters make appearances, and they talk about each other in each subsequent series. In Vinyl, they make mention of the guy from Plastic, and then in Plush, issue one, you see the guy from Vinyl in it. So it's very cool that it's interconnected serial killer universe, but this one is about furries and demons and cannibals all just killing each other, and it's super fun, super stupid, like just gory fun action that you only can see in independent comic books nowadays. I definitely recommend reading the other two books as well, but Plush is just every time, I don't think they can outdo themselves with their serial killer like spins, and they just keep going. No, cannibalistic Plush furries, that's crazy.
Yeah, Plush is wild. Like reading Plush, I was like, it was, I mean, being in store, I was like, this is insane. This is
like, how is this Image book?
Yeah, like when it came out, I was laughing because we were like, I do think they lean into the idea that it's like the goat guy is actually a demon. And they're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then he's not. And I'm like, oh, boo. But it's, dude, it's over the top. And it is a story about a guy that's just trying to find himself.
Dude, all these stories are like that. In Plastic is a dude just trying to live his life. In Vinyl, it's just a like somebody who's like retired and just wants to make friends but can't because he's a serial killer. And then in this one, it's just dudes trying to figure out what they want to be. It's just very cool to see like that kind of storytelling with such a serious backdrop. And when I say serious, bless. When I say serious, I don't mean serious in tone. I mean serious in, you know, like content, because it's graphic, it's gory, it's visceral.
Oh, no,
describe a horror movie, throw it in there.
This is a book that's not for the faint of heart. Like, you have to have like a stomach for it.
Yeah, I love the way he draws, Daniel Hilliard draws blood. It's just such, it just feels over the top because it's like a stream of vomit, essentially. It's just so fun.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, that book is actually insane.
James, what is your number four?
My number four is Geiger Ground Zero, written by Jeff Johns. I am a Ghost Machine whore.
Just the casual Ghost Machine whore line. There you go.
So, Geiger Ground Zero is a sequel to Geiger. It sets up the new ongoing series that's coming out later on this year, coming out in April this year. It is a directed, like I said, it's a two-issue, it's actually a two-issue story, which kind of shows off some of the other characters that you're going to meet in the unnamed universe, kind of focusing on like Northerner and Redcoat and Joker Joe in the series. It is just a cool, condensed mini story about Geiger facing off against one of the nuclear knights as he kind of wanders the desert of Las Vegas. It's cool. And it has very Silver Age moments because a lot of the characters are named, like, Geiger's name is like Turk Geiger, you know, and he has radioactive powers. It's very Silver Age. But Gary Frank's art's so delicious, it doesn't matter. you know, it gives that great feel of like it gets a great modern look because of the art style, but a great Silver Age, or you know, Silver Age into the rebranded modern era stuff. where it's like back to basics for comics, and that's why I like this story a lot. Also,
it's Geoff Johns' bread and butter.
Yeah, exactly. He's the guy that, like, if you told me years ago that he was a Silver Age like writer and had like an old school guy do a book for him, it would read amazingly. You know, he doesn't have the hang up of like the million narration box. I'm reading Silver Age Avengers right now, and it's like, you don't need a million narration bubbles, but like a lot of stuff that Geoff Johns writes, you don't need it. Like, he doesn't do that like narration like box problem, but what he does is he does let the art speak for itself, but like everything feels very Silver Age-y. So yeah, that was my next pick, and then I'll do my next one after that, which is
number three,
which is Hellfire Gala 2023. This is the kickoff to the Fall of X five Shotgun Blast miniseries and the two series Fall of the House of X and the Rise of the Powers of Ten, which are both those series are currently going on. It is the start of the end of Krakoa. It's insane. The entire event is done as an annual one shot, and it was off the wall. People are still talking about how insane the event was, and we are 6 months out from the event. It was such a twist ending that no one saw coming, and it is kind of like it sets off the Fall of Krakoa with a huge bang, and I mean that in the most literal sense. There's so much death and blood, and man, if you thought Krakoa, the end of Krakoa was going to be just like, oh, an editorial thing, like, oh, we're just going to not talk about it anymore. No, the writers are getting rid of it with a punch to the gut. It's fantastic. And I look forward to the Hellfire Gal every year. But God, man, that was wild to read that book. It is collected right now in a trade, which includes the Unlimited Comics that are all the characters that were nominated, like they're them finding out that they didn't get chosen. I think it has Immortal X-Men right before it, and then Hellfire Gala itself and something else. I mean, there's a couple.
I think it also has the I think there's another Unlimited comic called Last Rites.
Something like that, I think.
Which is like a low key direct sequel to it, but like with characters that weren't even like on screen, in quotes, or on panel in the main story.
Yeah, it's,
so it's one of those, but it's just another addition to the craziness of that Hellfire Gala.
Yes,
so.
And if you're reading Hellfire Gala and just want to start X-Men, if you want to get into X-Men, that's the best way. Actually, it's the best jumping on point into X-Men now to the end of the Fall of X. So, yeah, that's a book I cannot recommend enough. Hunter, do you want to do your four?
I did my four, and we're on number three for me. My number three is Night of the Ghoul from Scott Snyder, Dark Horse, and Francesco Franciavilla. It is just another horror book, but in the vein of a classic horror movie. So the idea behind it was, what if, you know, with all the iconic horror movies from back in the day, like Dracula and Creature from the Black Lagoon and Frankenstein's Monster and all that stuff, this comes from that idea of what if there was another movie that was made around that time called Night of the Ghoul, but instead of it being a fictional monster, it was a real monster that followed these people back from World War II or World War I. I forget exactly which World War it was. It was one of them.
One.
Yeah, and it follows them back as they're filming it, and it's a real ass monster, and the director never releases the film, and then he like goes into obscurity, and this one guy is a big horror like aficionado and like collector, and I forget what he calls himself, but he like takes old movies and like polishes them and re-releases them. It's that kind of feel.
Yeah.
And he wants to get this Night of the Ghoul thing. He thinks it's going to be a cool thing for him and his son to do, because his son's like in that in-between age where he's like, my dad's lame, but my dad's cool. So they're trying to like push that. So they both go visit the old director, and it turns out that the director has been holding on to the monster, and it like feeds from inside the hospital that he's staying in. But, you know, I won't spoil how that gets made, but, you know, that's the premise. to where, you know, he's in there and it's there with him. And it's very interesting, crazy, like visually, if you've ever seen anything that French Avella does, it's visually stunning. He uses colors very well and sets tone nicely with his inks. So if you have one, if you're looking for a new horror book that has like an old school feel, definitely pick up Night of the Ghoul. I highly recommend it.
It's awesome.
Number three.
Night of the Ghoul is actually really cool. It being a three issue miniseries is also really like a nice.
It's the size of six, but yeah. The way that Dark Horse releases Scott Snyder's digital books is they chunk them up and do like double releases, which is great. You've had your issues with the Dark Horse re-releases of Scott Snyder's books, but I'm glad that you were able to appreciate some of the quality of some of them, even if you don't like how they handle the business aspect of it.
Oh, of course. Like I said, I do like this story a lot. I always do like the fact that it's like, oh, what's the monster what actually inspired all the monsters that you think of? Where do they all really come from? You know, that was like, it's an awesome take. And it being a gothic, almost it's a suspense thriller written in a comic form. And I do always say that Snyder does a fantastic job writing horror. That's his bread and butter, is horror.
Yeah, all of his horror books are guaranteed to be amazing. Like, he still has other books that aren't horror that are good, but his horror books are very, very good. I managed to read Clear as well this year. It didn't make my top 10, but it was definitely considered in the top 10.
It was okay.
Clear was very, very good. I just think it ended not great enough for me. Like, it still ends like in a good fashion, but I feel like the buildup was just like, damn, so close.
Yeah, that one's okay.
But it was still very, very cool. But yeah, Night of the Ghoul definitely squeaked up there for me. But James, what's your number three?
My number three was Hellfire Gala. I'm on my number
two. We're number two.
We have
you got me
two.
Doing it, you son of a bitch.
We have the same number two.
Number two.
So
we have the same number two? Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about it, dude.
We both have World Saga, written by Philip Taylor Johnson, drawn by a bunch of people.
Tom Taylor's even credit. Oh no, not. I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. That's Kal-El Returns.
Yes,
my bad. Yes, the War World Saga.
Yes. And I include the World Saga as a whole, so that includes Action Comics, Superman, Son of Kal-El. Oh, sorry. No, that's just. I'm thinking. Yes, I.
You're doing it too, you son of a bitch.
That's Kal-El Returns.
It's Action Comics. It's some. It's Batman Superman special.
Authority special.
There's an Authority special as well, and then there's some Future State content in there. But it's all the Philip Kennedy Johnson stuff that revolves around Superman going into War World.
Dude, it's so good. It's so good.
Dude, it made me buy more Superman books. Like, I have a few on my shelf, but, you know, I got the War World Saga, and then I had to get Kal-El Returns. I'm going to get the Authority. I'm going to pick up Rise of Metallo and Supercore when they drop as well. Like, War World Saga got me hyped on Superman.
Dude, it's so good. Like, it's crazy.
I mean, it didn't hurt it that Mongol is the main bad guy. And while it's not the original Mongol, I still love me some Mongol. His design is always cool, yeah. And his cruelty is always especially fun. So even though it was a different guy, it was still cool to see, you know, a Superman story that I really feel like I connected with.
Yeah.
And it having one of my favorite villains, at least from the TV shows. I remember him being in the Justice League show and him being very cool.
Yeah, he was in the Justice League show.
I've only seen him in a few comics and then in a few other animated shows outside of that. But in Superman and in Justice League, Mongol was always badass. When he showed up, it was a good episode.
Dude, it was reading this book. Like, you're reading. If you like Conan, you'll love this book. It is like a barbarian style Superman. He's on Warworld. He has no powers and he's just got to fight. Like, and they call him a bloodless sword. Because, like, he won't kill anybody, but everyone's like, eh, we'll kill who we have.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry.
No problem.
I tried to cover my mic up.
Like, it sounded like a gun, like, cocking when I said that. I'm like, Jesus. But, dude, it was such a good book. Like, from start to finish. Like, and you know what's cool about it is, like, all the characters that are in there are compelling. Like, even the Olmec Light Ray story, as much as, like, it's like.
Oh, yeah. I was rooting for him. I was like, I don't know who these characters are because I didn't know that. I mean, you told me like right as I bought it that I needed to read The Authority, but I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'll just read Warworld Saga. And while I don't think it hindered my experience, it definitely didn't, you know.
You're missing
something. They left enough breadcrumbs for me to pick it up, but I'm still missing some context. But I was still rooting for them. Every time OMAC would make a stupid mistake, I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, I really connected with some of these characters. Like, dude, I liked Manchester Black a lot in this. Yeah. I thought, like, he had really good characterization because from what I remember, Manchester Black is
Tomas
Superman versus the Elite.
Yeah. Yeah,
Superman versus the Elite, the movie.
Yep.
Then he popped up in New 52 Teen Titans.
Yeah.
And then he was in the Tomasi run of Superman.
Yep.
And I think he was in All-Star Superman, but don't quote me on that.
He's not.
And then he pops up in – okay, he's not. And then he pops up in this. And I was like, okay. I was like, I know him to be like a Constantine-style dickhead, except more of a telepath and less of a magic man. And, man, they just like – I don't know. He's just like a very cool character. And then reading Kal-El Returns, I'm like, oh, man. Like, it's very – like – I want to count Kal-El Returns as part of the Warworld Saga, but it's its own conversation.
It's its own thing. Yes. But they did. So just for a little context, Manchester Black is supposed to be John Constantine / Jenny Quantum, Jenny Sparks from the Authority. Because when they made the Elite in the story of what's so funny about True Justice and the American Way, the Elite are parodies of the Authority.
Okay.
So that's why it's perfect that he's on the Authority. I love Apollo and Midnighter being on the team. And
oh, dude, more Midnighter stuff is always great. They made a during the Warworld Saga releasing single floppies in the backup stores for Action Comics, they had a book called Midnighter the Passenger.
Yeah.
And it takes place like in the future state Earth, but also during the Warworld Saga of future state. And it's just a nice, cool Midnighter story. So anything with Midnighter is cool, but having him pop up in Warworld Saga and him being like Superman's like general, I thought was super duper.
Dude, it was awesome. And like, it's great is that like the entire book is him trying to be like, I'm trying to save you, but like you made me sacrifice my husband for you. And I want to get him to get off this planet, but like, for some reason, I can't just let you die here. You know?
Yeah, he's like, you're Superman. I can't be that guy.
Yeah, he's like, I could just leave you if I really wanted to, but I don't want to. You know? And it's really cool to see, like, it is the Superman inspiration story. It is why he does what he does.
This is going to go down as one of the best Superman stories of all time. Oh, yes, I can already feel it. With not even talking about Kal-El Returns or the Future State stuff or the Rise of Metallo stuff that's coming out now for the Dawn of DC. Just the Warworld Saga book itself is going to go down as like a classic go-to Superman run.
Oh, 100%. 100%. It's going to be...
And if it's not, I'll make it happen. I'll scream from the mountaintops.
Honestly, like, if you told me that's an evergreen story, that's a story you can read without continuity behind it, you can see
it's almost an evergreen story. Yeah. The only like part you need is you need to know the Authority's new team members.
Yes,
and then, like I said, you don't need it. They do a good, like, explanation during the Batman Superman one shot that's with the evil Batman Ra's al Ghul stuff from like that dark vampire Night Earth.
Yeah.
Like, they do a good introduction to the new Authority team in that, like, annual. But, you know, it's not evergreen by itself, I would say, because you do need, like, a little bit of context. But it's still a nice piece of classic Superman art that you could easily sell to any newcomer. Yes, sure. But, you know, with a little editor's note that says you might want to pick up this one.
Fair. Fair.
Yeah. I do think, though, it is very evergreen in its own right.
Oh, yeah, dude.
You know what I mean? It's a double-edged sword for evergreen, but yeah, I think it works.
It's a story that will go down as, again, you're right, it is going to be one of the best Superman stories of all time.
Mm-hmm. it's just the way that like he inspires the Warzunians, but the ones that were captured, not the originals.
Yes,
I forget what they call themselves. Like I don't know, I don't have the slaves, I guess.
The Warzunians.
Like I don't want to be that guy, but like they're slaves.
Yeah, the Warzunians are the slave race.
They're the Mongol people.
Yeah,
the Warzunes are the Mongol people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Phalacians, Phalacians.
Yeah, I'm talking about. I'm not talking just about the Kryptonian people that Clark found. I'm talking about everybody that isn't a Warzone who's on the planet that's captured.
Oh yeah,
and being used in these like chain iron fights.
Dude,
it's very cool for Superman to be like, why do you guys care so much about these bindings? They're just making you like work harder and harder to make yourself like, you know, more restrained when fighting Mongol. You'll never be able to rise up unless you break your chains. And every time Superman breaks somebody's chains, they flip out. They're like, why would you? It's essentially Superman walking into a cult and going, oh man,
he's like, we gotta fix this.
Yeah, he's like, it's time to fix it. So he's like Bob the Builder in this story. He's like, we can fix it. He's just doing cool stuff. And then he just adopts two kids. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that are in his run now.
Dude, but what's crazy is they have like in the middle of the Warworld saga, they just have it tied to New Gods for like no reason. They're like, in this planet holds the fire of Olgun, who's like an old dark side like character.
He's an old god. Gods. Yeah, he's an old god.
And then when you read Kal-El Returns, I know I'm jumping the gun, but they bring it up again, and like Orion shows up, and he's like, you remember when you did this in Warworld? And he's like, yeah, to save a kid's life. And Orion's like, yeah, but fuck you.
Yeah, I mean, Orion's a prick,
very
though.
Cool. Like, yeah, like. I don't know, man. Warworld Saga is just so good, and it's leading into a lot of cool stuff going forward.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, Philip Kennedy Johnson's not writing Superman, I feel like he did take Superman in a really good direction while he was off planet. Because when they shipped him off planet in Action Comics, that's when Superman John Kent was the main storyline.
Yes.
That's where Tom Taylor came in and did his like 18 issues or 17 issues.
23. Like that
before the 23, that's such a weird number. But yeah, like, it's just so good. So good. Action Comics, so good.
It really is.
Philip Kennedy Johnson really, like told everybody, I know how to write Superman with Future State, because those books, even though they weren't really Future State books, they were just, like, Game of Thrones Superman books.
Yes.
People were just like, oh, no, this guy knows how to do some Superman. And then they gave him Action Comics, and he did this. Paid off. Philip Kennedy Johnson, you're in my top 10 writers now.
He's fantastic.
I got your Hulk book on my shelves. I don't read Hulk, but I got your Hulk book.
And that book is also really good.
Yeah, I'm excited to read it. That'll probably be on my my top 10 2024. Maybe spoilers. We'll see how the rest of the run goes, but I'm excited for volume 2 of Incredible Hulk, which will have a new Ghost Rider, and it's going to be it's a Ghost Rider who drives a tank. I'm in.
Yeah, we died in World War 1.
It's called War Devils. It should be coming out with this week. New solicits for April.
Yeah, it actually starts this week, yeah.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the trade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll do my number one, which is Action Comics and Superman Dawn of DC 2023.
So you just went from Action, you went from Warworld Saga to what's left.
Yes. Because Kenny Johnson finished his story in December. So his, and I just like, and the current story arc for Superman ended in 2024. Dude, the Dawn of DC Superman stuff is like what makes Superman Superman. It's fan. So Superman's being written by Justin Williamson. The arc I'm talking about, the stories I'm talking about for Action are written by Philip Kennedy Johnson. They continue directly from War. So the Action stuff continues directly from War World. Action becomes a Superman family book. Even though there's other stories in it, which is cool when you're reading singly, because what they did was they kept the same price point as a normal issue, but then added two extra stories every issue that all spun out into other things. One spun out into the Superboy Man of Tomorrow book. One became Steelworks. One became the Power Girl book that's out. One becomes the Fire and Ice book that's out. But you have Philip Kennedy Johnson's story, which is the Superman family. What happens with the rise of Metallo and the Blue Earth movement? And, you know, humanity not liking the idea there's a planet floating outside them with a bunch of freed slaves.
it's fantastic. And you just heard me and Hunter rant and love all about Warworld Saga. If you love that, continue on to Action Comics. And then, of course, Superman and Lois post what happened at the end of Return of Kal-El. Also, just read Return of Kal-El. What happens now that Superman's identity is like a secret, and that if you find out, you die. And also Lex being the man in the chair for Superman. What happens when
Oh, dude, when I was reading Kal-El Returns, and I was like, just like, dude, Lex is like he's just such a shithead now. Like, I remember when I first started reading Lex, New 52 Lex was pretty good. But then around Forever Evil and into Summer of Rebirth, he was going like down an arc where he was not necessarily a villain. He was just kind of like a nice dickhead, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, look, I'm going to protect the Earth because that's what the strongest man on Earth would do, me. And so he's like, I'm the best. Let's do this. And then, you know, I guess I just missed an era of – I guess it was right after goodness, Year of the Villains, when he got taken over and became Apex Lex, which we all talked about is
really
an interesting story for Lex. We all don't talk about it, but it's wild to see that he's back to his maniacal ways. There's a line that he drops where he's like, look, anyone who finds out about you will die. And he's like, I thought about making your wife and your son also die. And Superman's just like, no way you just said that. And he throws Lex Luthor into the moon. I was like, okay, we're back.
Dude, it's so good. And then like now, like because of that story, Lex is in jail, but he's like the man in the ear for Superman. He's the man in the chair. He's like, so there's a line in like issue one of the Superman run from Williamson, and he goes, oh, he's talking to you. He goes, because Superman's super hearing, he's attuned it so he doesn't get overloaded, except for certain people, which is his family, Bruce and Lex. Mm-hmm. They can hear all the time. Which blows holes in the idea that, you know, Batman's able to plan things against him, but whatever. And like Lex is able just to talk to him while he's fighting. So every fight that Superman's ever in, Lex is like giving him like lessons to like, oh, hey, you should do this instead of this. And, you know, this is how you should have killed him. And he's like, I don't want to kill him. And he's like, well, you could have. And now you won't have to deal with this again. You know, it's really,
well, you could have.
Dude, it's so cool. And that's how he also gets Super Core, which is Lex Core, is Will to him. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. Supercore is now out in trade. That came out at the end, end of last year. So pick that book up also. It's awesome. The Action Comics Rise of Metallo story is coming out in March.
I'm excited for that one.
So, yep. So that wraps up my list of 10. Hunter, which is your number one for the year?
My number one for the year is Do a Power Bomb, another another Daniel Warren Johnson book. Started off with a Daniel Warren Johnson, ended with a Daniel Warren Johnson. You got a nice little burger on that. You got a nice little Daniel Warren Johnson sandwich. It's just, I don't know, man. He just knows how to make me like feel when I read these books. Murder Falcon, I'll talk about till the day I die. Murder Falcon's probably one of my favorite comics of all time now. So his spiritual sequel to Murder Falcon is Do a Power Bomb. It's about this wrestling family that has a death in the family, and instead of confronting that trauma, they just don't talk about it for like 20 years. And then right as the daughter of the main wrestler family is getting into the professional circuit, she's offered a deal from a necromancer to fight in the wrestling tournament across space and time, and including dead people, I guess, for a chance to bring her mom back to life. So she teams up with the man that killed her mother in that fateful match like 20 years ago. Turns out that's her dad. Super duper awesome. That's an issue 2 spoiler. Don't worry. It's a 7-issue story. So while it's a spoiler, it's an early one. And maybe it's an issue 3 spoiler, but either way. It's just, I don't know, man. It's just a nice story that hits you in the feels. Like, it's just about, you know, like coming into the person you are and not really like, you know, it's about confronting the past and maybe talking to your family. And then, you know, getting over certain things that, you know, it's a grief thing. You know, like, you know, they do win the tournament. That's how every story goes. I know that's a spoiler, but that's how every story goes.
Uh-huh.
And it is interesting on how they end up resolving the wish, essentially. And it's just a very cool, visually stunning. Issue, I think it's 6 or 7, has a really awesome fight that I will not spoil, I promise. But it is just something that I didn't think I would see in comic books ever. And then, lo and behold, there it is. If you're a fan of wrestling, if you're a fan of just like fun supernaturally stories, this hits both of those bars. Wrestling meets monsters and zombies and universe killers. It's just so cool.
That's awesome.
Definitely check out Do a Powerbomb. Can't recommend that enough. Daniel Warren Johnson, keep doing it, man. Keep doing it.
All right.
That's my number one.
Nice. Those are our top 20 for 2023. We'll wrap the episode up real quick with some book recommendations that came out this week, so you can check those out. We have from the top, sorry, let me pull them up real quick. We have Dead X-Men from Marvel Comics, spinning out the fall of X-Men, and especially Hellfire Gala 2023. Those that had died during it are now resurrected, and they have a special mission. This book ties directly to the rise of Powers of Ten. Without spoiling that series, these guys have a mission to find Moira and to get to her first life. And it's really cool. It's weird. It's a lot of reality hopping. It's almost very Exiles-like. Mm-hmm. You have the Batman Superman World Finals Annual, which sets up the new storyline for them, with Mixoplex and Batmite. And the evil dark doppelgangers of the villain from the fifth dimension. If there is a Batmite, there has to be like a Joker variant type of thing. It's really cool. It's really funny. And it does also three other stories, which is The Challenge of the Unknown. Bumblebee, which is a prelude to the World's Finest Teen Titans book. And a Metamorpho story, which spins out of issue, I think, 11 of this series. So it's a cool anthology. Actually, just a cool anthology if you want to pick it up and read a cool book. Mm-hmm. And that's done by various people. That's also produced by DC Comics. We have Power Rangers Unlimited Morphin Masters spinning out of issue 116 of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers by Boom Studios. This one shot sets up what Kimberly's or Ranger Slayer's story is going to be going forward, and kind of answers who and what the Morphin Masters are to the Power Rangers lore. It does look like they're wrapping up the series for Power Rangers with this book. But if you're looking to expand the lore of the universe and see how the rest of the story might go on, it's a really cool one-shot. And if you are reading the Darkest Hour storyline, it's a must-read for the story. We have the Trinity Special, written by Tom King, produced by DC Comics. This is a spin-out of Wonder Woman. It collects all the backstories that have been happening in Wonder Woman's issue 3 through 6, plus a new story called Daughters. It is Trinity, or Lizzie, mostly being babysat by John and Damian. And like, as time has gone on, and it's funny, and it's cute, and it's stupid. I love the three of them together. There's a cute part where Damian is babysitting her, and she's like, "I love you," and she's like, "He's like what?" And he's like, "She's like, I love you. You're my brother," and I'm like, "Oh, it hits you right in the feels." It's a cool like sibling book, like because Damian and John are like, because they're closer in age. Besides the John time jump BS, which they don't talk about in this. Lizzie's so much older than them, and she looks up to the two of them. And it's really funny to see that Wonder Woman's daughter's there, and then Damian's like arguing with John about making sure she gets to bed because Diana's coming over. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's fun. If you are reading Wonder Woman, you should pick this book up. If you haven't been, you just want to know who Trinity is, pick this book up. And finally, we have Moon Man, written by Kid Cudi and produced by Kid Cudi and Kyle Higgins, being produced by Image Comics. I originally thought this was going to be a part of the Massiverse when they first announced it at New York Comic Con, but it's not its own thing. What happens when people go to space and come back? Transformed a little bit. Surrounded, it's almost like a parody of FF, in which our main character has come back from a sublunar space trip. Now he is imbued with new powers and abilities, and now he has to protect his city. I think it's in Detroit. I think they are in Detroit, from the corporation and the people that are living and taking over parts of the city. It's really cool. If you like sci-fi, if you like Silver Age FF, with a geopolitical modern twist, it's awesome. Also, it's written by Kid Cudi. That will each issue will have a new song to a sound to an album he's working on. So, yeah, ooh, if you like Kid Cudi, you'll like this. And that's it for our book recommendations. Besides the other 20 we did today.
Yeah, go read every single book we talked about. Definitely pick them up in singles or trades, whatever your preferred method is.
Yes.
Get physical media. Keep getting physical media. Xbox just released something the other day that said they might altogether stop doing physical copies of video games. When is that going to start for comic books? Let's say never. Keep floppies in hand. Keep trades in hand. Anyway, support your local comic book shops, everybody. Pick up these books.
Yes. So, guys, thanks for listening. Head on our website, AndrewsComics.com. Check out this week's previews and new releases. Follow us on Instagram at Andrews_Comics. The podcast, Instagram, Andrews Amazing Podcast. And on X at Andrews Amazing. From the news, Hunter did the closeout part. Please support comics and physical media. It keeps all of us alive. So definitely do that. And, guys, we will see you hopefully next week with more goodies. We'll see you then. Peace.
Peace.